good morning, the West Coast. Good afternoon, the East Coast. And good evening, the Middle East. This is Orly Benny Davis, and this is my show. I'm so happy to have you here today because we have incredible guests awaiting for us. And in the uproar in the Middle East, it's surely important to talk to the real people and to give you the real truth of the situation. With us, we have a wonderful, wonderful person that I had the privilege and I'm humbled to introduce, Mr. Buck Oliver Revelle, one of the heroes of a nation, one that took America to different places in the midst of terror attack, and I'm very honored. Mr. Buck Revelle, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How are you today?
It's a beautiful day here in Dallas, Texas, Orly, and makes me think I'm in on the beach in Tel Aviv. Only we don't have the water.
I wish that we could go to the beach in Tel Aviv. These days we have missile attack, and yeah. I know that you have some feeling about the situation, and I would like you to tell us, what are you feeling? The one that, you know, that face terror in in real time. What can we do to change, to make a change in this situation, sir?
Well, first, I'm very thankful that that Israel has developed and that we were able to support the development of the Iron Dome, because otherwise, I think we'd already be in an all-out civil war with mass casualties on both sides. And there's no question that I think that Israel has to continue to bring pressure on Hamas until they shut down and stop their missile attacks. And in spite of the misdirected concern of Europe and the United Nations, instead of directing their platitudes and so forth against Israel, they should be talking to the Palestinians about conducting themselves in a manner which they don't bring on retaliation, which, cause at this point, retaliation is all that that Israel can do. I think that it's extremely important for Israel to do all that it can to minimize non-combatant civilian casualties. But as the Prime Minister has pointed out, when they embed themselves in the civilian population, in the schools, in the mosques, in the homes, to fire their rockets upon Israel, the only way to go back at them is to target where they are. We've had some of those issues in Afghanistan. Our government has made, I think, an incorrect assessment and not allowed the type of response that we should have been able to take against the Taliban. And I hope that Israel will hold fast and continue to go after Hamas wherever they choose to fire upon Israel or take hostile action toward Israel.
Absolutely. And the only problem is that we're facing two wars. One, the actual war that we have to face with a terrorist organization that thinks that they can deal with us and actually negotiate the term of the ceasefire. And the other one is the war of the media. You know, I heard in so many places that, everybody is pro-Palestinian, but the truth of the matter is Hamas is a terror organization, nothing to do with the Palestinians. And we have to distinguish them and try to call for dismantle them. What do you think about that? Because we are trying to ask the United Nations with UNRWA to take over the refugees camp that they are actually dealing with and elevate the pressure from the civil society there. And then we can ask for Hamas to dismantle their arm and maybe come to become a normal organization, but they have to, the world needs to pressure them. Israel cannot do it by itself.
Well, Hamas is a jihadist organization. It's a branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. Its goal is to destroy Israel. It will never be tamed. It will never be changed. It has to be destroyed and neutralized. Any attempt, you can't negotiate with people whose only goal is to destroy you. You have to neutralize them. And in doing so, you have to try and maintain as minimum of casualties outside of the combatants, and by that I mean also the terrorists, as possible, which is very difficult to do, and particularly in a small confined area. And people don't realize, particularly here in the United States, how tightly packed Israel and the West Bank and Gaza are. It's like greater Dallas-Fort Worth. And, if we were having 400 rocket attacks from Fort Worth to Dallas, I don't think that Dallas would put up with that very long. So it's a situation where the media is... now, by and large, the U.S. media has been better this time, but still our more leftist elements try and talk for that there should be a equivalent response. Well, how do you respond equivalently when your enemy is firing from civilian locations, from mosques and schools and hospitals and homes? You have to go after where they are, and I think the efforts made by the Israeli military to warn people to get out of certain areas has been extraordinary, and certainly I would like to see that continue, because no matter, Israel is so much better equipped to deal with the Hamas threat, military threat, not the political threat, that's a different issue. But obviously it's never going to be a fair fight if you're looking at the number of casualties on both sides. Israel is prepared to defend itself. Hamas doesn't care. In fact, it prefers to see more casualties because it gives it greater publicity on the international scene. And, that's something that in the Western society we don't accept. In their society, unfortunately, it is acceptable and even desirable.
Exactly. And, looking back at your history, which is so remarkable, you've been one of the heroes of Achille Lauro. You know, for people who don't know what Achille Lauro's story is, it's about a ship that got kidnapped by terrorist group, and Mr. Ravel with his team went there and actually rescued it, and with extreme success. And what I want to tell the world is that today that we can overcome it. And I would like you to tell us about a few words about how can you really succeed by overcoming terror, because wherever it attacks, wherever it is, it's a global threat. It's not ours only to keep. It's the world has to suffer. And you actually, sir, succeeded. Tell us about that story. It's incredible.
Well, actually, the Achille Lauro was, I didn't lead that operation. I was in the sit room at the White House, and I directed the law enforcement aspects of it. I led the first overseas apprehension in 1987 off the coast of Lebanon, and we brought him back to the United States for the first trial based on extraterritorial jurisdiction. That was Fawaz Yunus, and we did that through an operation where we lured him off the coast of Lebanon and arrested him at sea and never took him into any other sovereign territory, and then took it all the way to the Supreme Court to establish the precedent of extraterritorial jurisdiction when a terrorist attacks a U.S. citizen. The Achille Lauro, we worked with the Italians and NATO to resolve that situation. Obviously, Egypt was playing a two-faced role at that time. They were telling us one thing and doing something else because they were dealing with the PFLP, the PLA, they were telling us they were doing one thing and they were actually doing something else. And so we found out through intelligence that the hijackers who had killed an American citizen on board the Achille Lauro during the hijacking were on an Air Egypt flight, and we were able to scramble a flight of our own fighters and force it down in Sicily at Sigonella. And then we had an issue with the Italians over jurisdiction. I advised the National Security Advisor that we had no choice but to surrender jurisdiction to the Italians because the Achille Lauro was an Italian flagship and the terrorists were in Italian territory. But we followed the case very closely, and I accompanied Attorney General Ed Meese at the time to Italy to resolve the coordination issues that had come up because of the fact that the Italians were not interested in surrendering jurisdiction of those individuals to us. But we worked it out where we made sure that they were properly prosecuted and that we were able to obtain a measure of justice in that issue. And then in the future events, we were better prepared to deal with the cross-jurisdictional issues that often arise in dealing with international terrorism and how terrorists have been able to use international borders and boundaries and different systems of justice to essentially block Western nations from carrying out effective countermeasures, short of actually going to war or mounting an extraterritorial rendition.
Right, and I think that's one of the challenges that we all face by having a global understanding to how to deal and, prosecute, because there are people still these days that ride around, terrorists from one country to another, and nobody can put their hands on them because they're in and off the jurisdiction of somebody. And this is a job that the United Nations should have taken, and as we know, the United Nations is not really helpful. And we hope that it will come to term with its role in the world and make a better thing. But I'm so happy and thankful for your participation in this and your participation in the safeguard of the world, worldwide, because once you take yourself to Italy or to Nice and do the right thing, that's actually influenced the rest of them, and they start coming to term with what justice is and how we approach it. And I wish that we can spread more of your wisdom, sir, to other nations, because your learning and guidance is very important at this point, because people are playing with smoking mirrors. So we're trying to solve a lot of situation, and you, sir, is an incredible example to how you can solve it and come and bring it to term. I do thank you for your time, sir, and I'm honored and humbled that you come and spend time with us. Anytime, it will be a great time to have you. It's always a pleasure talking to you, and I hope that we're going to have a chance to solve the situation in the Middle East fast and start living like humanity should live in brotherhood and friendship for all.
Well, thank you, Orly. I always enjoy talking with you, and I wish you and your fellow countrymen well. And obviously, your battling terrorism there affects the safety and security of those of us in the United States and essentially much of the rest of the world. So it's very unfortunate that you your entire country is on the front line, but that's the happenstance of history, and I'm pleased that Israel is being very staunch and forthright in dealing with the terrorist threat.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. God bless you. Take care, sir.
Good night.
Good night. And let's go for a break. Hey, I'm back, and this is Orly Benny Davis, and this is my show, and I'm so happy to have our next guest is John Villanueva. He's a guy that's been an incredible force for the intelligence apparatus and been working so hard to help the world to become a better one by deeds and by doing, by putting himself on the line. And I'm so happy to have him. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Orly. It's a pleasure to be on with you.
Yeah, I'm so happy, especially in these days when, the Middle East is in uproar, and we just spoke to Mr. Bakrovel, and he was telling us how we can overcome terrorism. But there are some reason that terrorists, evolved around And right now we are focusing on Gaza, and the Gaza had a misery, had a condition, a very bad condition. And I would like your input on this overall situation. What do you think we should do at this point, sir?
Well, let's talk about Gaza for a second. And let's talk about what's taking place in terms of the protests, in terms of terrorism, and in terms of the grievances of its people. Most of the reasons why the Palestinians in Gaza are in the state they're in is because they live in a dire state of poverty, despair, illiteracy, and a scarcity of economic opportunity. And that's as a result of the fighting that's taking place, not only between the Palestinians and the Israelis, but within the Palestinian communities themselves. By destabilizing the Palestinian community, they give the rest of the Middle East a cause that they can line up on. And there's a vested interest in keeping these embers, afire, because it helps to raise money, and that money is diverted from causes that would support the Palestinians to other terrorist organizations throughout the region. So to defeat that, to defeat any idea or ideal, you have to have a better idea. You have to give people an opportunity to focus on something other than the despair that they're in. And I believe that one of the things that Israel can do to get ahead of this is to actually create an economic empowerment zone in Gaza. Gaza used to be a viable port city. It has an incredible...
Absolutely,
port.
Absolutely, John. Let me just put it. The idea to come to terms with them was a long time when we had all this agreement. But in the agreement, they're supposed to dismantle their arm. How can we go about, promoting the economy and the growth and going on without them dismantling their first base? And then they calling, everybody that we are actually seizing all excess of things because we don't want any weapons to come back and forth. They need to come and play, and playing they will benefit, as you said.
Well, there's three parts to that problem. The first part is that all of the intellectual and economic capital in Gaza, and what I'm talking about is Palestinians who are educated, had wealth, and had entrepreneurial skills, they were among the first to flee because they were concerned with their family. So those that remain are those that are in desperate circumstances that can't afford to go anywhere else. And they're susceptible to both the rhetoric of Hamas, okay, and the pressure that Hamas puts upon its own population, and at the same time, the provoked hostility of the Israelis themselves. And one of the things that's needed is a sense of stability or a sense of control within Gaza that then extends opportunity of some type to the Palestinians that are resident there. And I don't think you and I have talked about this before. People talk about the United Nations. But the United Nations has never, okay, aside from standing up refugee centers, okay, and aside from, grandstanding on whether Israel is right or wrong to be doing what it's doing in the West Bank and Gaza, the United Nations has never really done anything productive there. What's needed is realistically, what's needed is private equity. Gaza has to be stabilized to the point where you can bring in private equity to develop that water line, to build a deep water port, to reignite trade and commerce in the region. They create some stability, economic opportunity for the Palestinians to have a viable life, a viable existence. Because people who are hungry, can be led one way or another very easily. But people that are secure, that feel that the future is secure, and that their children may in fact have a strong future themselves, are less willing to fight or be adversarial. And so economic opportunity is what creates stability. But at this point, Gaza is in ruin. The people are caught in the middle between Hamas and others that are looking to provoke hostilities with Israel, and Israel attempting to defend itself and in turn retaliating to those attacks. But we can't forget that there is a segment of that population there that's just caught in the middle.
They are hostage of their terrorist organization. That's the problem. The world just dropped the ball on them. You know, it was nice when everybody put pressure on Israel to give back Gaza. It was nice when they wanted Israel to sign an accord and a peace agreement. And every time you're saying, come to the table. But you cannot take a part of the agreement and don't respect the other one. They took the space, but they created a Hamastan, as Benjamin Netanyahu mentioned. It was not supposed to happen. They were supposed to dismantle. We actually gave weapon to the policemen. We trained them. They got trained by so many Americans that I recall. And what we have now, we have a terrorist organization putting hostage 1 million population, and we have to take the terms with what happened if they get attacked. So there was a call out, you know, to everybody to evacuate, to start moving on. There is UNRWA, the United Nations refugees camp, it's supposed to cater to them. They get billions of dollars. Let them go aside and let's, you know, talk Turkey to those terrorist organizations, dismantle your guns or else. And I think that Israel did everything in its power to do so.
Well, yes, but what remains, right, whenever you have fighting, whenever you have hostility, okay, whenever you have people evacuating their home, and whenever you have communities being leveled as a result of the fighting, it's not that easy to move back into those communities and make them viable again. And if the people who were there to start with had very little, then they're going to have even less. And refugee camps, you know and I know that the best a refugee camp can do is basically feed the hungry and process them for, you know, refugee status in some other country.
But John, and the refugee camp never got dismantled. They kept them there. That's what's one of the problems. They assigned a cord, but the United Nations never let go. It's a tricky situation. There are some other players that their interest is to keep those people in a refugee camp. And, you know, I'm talking as an Israeli and as an American, and I can tell you, you know, we need to really face the real truth there. They don't know how to create a stabilized, organized state. And the United Nations promised probably that they will do something for them. They take the money and they manage the people. Hamas took care of all the education system, which, of course, indoctrinate them to the anti-world, or anti-infidel routine. But the idea is that nobody else took care of that. You know, they push Israel, you know, just sign it and force them to throw around thousands of people out of their houses just to give the Palestinian state. Now they're a state, but they've never been a state, so they don't know how to do them. And a question I asked you before, why the Palestinians should take a state now that they never had before? The Kurds that are in Turkey and Iraq, that are 30 million, and they're well organized, and they manage a lot of things in Iraq there, and they should have a space of their own. Why nobody gives them a piece of land? For some reason, they decided to come along, take over this place of Gaza, of course, but give it to terrorist organizations. So the world needs to come out of its bogus position. It needs to really look the truth in the eye. Yes, sir.
Now, Orly, your show is named The Impossible Truth.
Right.
And what I'm about to say is not going to be popular, but I think you know in your heart of hearts it's honest. And that is that the thought of an independent Palestinian state is a dream. But it's a dream that has no future. And the reason why is because Israel itself cannot afford to give up the Gaza, nor can it afford to give up the West Bank for security reasons. If you had two independent states living side by side, and if those were truly independent states, then the new Palestinian state would have to have the right to have its own military, to allow its military allies to have bases in their country. They'd have to have control of the water, of the electricity, of their air rights. And all of those things potentially pose a threat to Israel. And you know and I know that the Israeli strategists are not in favor of that. So why don't we stop pretending that there is such a thing as a viable Palestinian state?
There's a viable
Israel that can create a space, a safe space, in which Palestinians can live and prosper, just like the Israeli-Palestinians do in Israel proper.
They are not Palestinian. They are Israeli Arabs. This is different. You know, in the resolution, United Nations resolution in 181 in 1947 declared that within 100 days of declaration of the state, they should decide if they want to be Israeli or Arabs or else. And, they divided the land at that point. And, of course, the Arab population rejected it. But whoever stayed got an ID, a blue ID, Israeli, and they live and work and they're happy and they mix with the population. They speak the language. There is no problem. Israeli have no problem with the Arab Israeli. The situation is escalating out on the West Bank because they're touching ground with the holy space of Jerusalem. Now, for some reason, the world thought that because they put a little mosque on top of the holy place of the Judaism, it's theirs. This is bogus. We have to understand that Jerusalem is the city of David. From the 3,000 years ago, we cannot, for the life of us, understand why people who understand and believe in the Bible come and wants to give Jerusalem to Palestinians that they were never a country, they never stayed, and said, hey, take the holy place of the whole world. This is something that needs to be addressed, and Israeli and the Jewish people as the custodians of holy places, because God bestow upon them, if we talk in theology, it's bestow upon the Jewish people to give light upon a nation, to help, to assist, to give understanding, to enlighten other people. And the duty is the burden. It's not a privilege in our case, you know. And Jerusalem is supposed to be the place where all the world come together before God. And for some reason, they put their hands on there, and they riot. So we have a situation every day now on Temple Mount that the Jews that come and, you know, visitors, Christian or Jews, that come around, the Muslim roar upon them and scream in their face and don't let them have a minute of peace in the holy space. And you know, God, This is not going to take a long time before somebody realizes that, you know, you have to have it sacred. Sacred place should be sacred. You cannot roar. You cannot scream. You cannot go to a church and start screaming. This is God's space. And God, you know, will do his thing. There is a God and it's not us. So what I'm saying is, the Gaza was given to the Palestinian already by the Israeli. And yes, frankly, honestly, I believe that we don't want to go back. It's not our interest to go back. We don't want to manage million and seven Palestinians. We want Egypt to take, to give them port, you know, a place to start traffic is their goods and everything. If they want to be in peace, Israel will conduct a peaceful effort. But you cannot terrorize the whole region.
Now, in all honesty, Egypt under Morsi, they can barely manage their own affairs. Do you think they're prepared to manage Gaza?
No, they don't need to manage Gaza. Gaza needs to be managed by the Palestinian, by the Abu Mazen. But Abu Mazen is not welcome. They made some accord. He said, hey, we have a brother, the Hamas and the PLO, but Abu Abbas is not welcome. So it's a phony deal. If they decided to, every time they were saying, we talk with the Palestinian, and I would say, what about Gaza? You cannot talk to one part of the Palestinian and forget a million servants. And they said, no, the Hamas is there. We don't talk to them. I said, it's not going to happen. Now, they unite. Everybody was in Israel were uproaring. It's not right. I know it's not right because they are still, you know, declaring themselves, in their policy that they want to destroy Israel. So the PLO needs to, you know, change it. They need to unite and evolve, you know, to come. Also, the PLO was a terrorist organization. Let them evolve. But what happened there, somebody is not letting them be. And that's the fact that, you know, Abu Mazen needs to take charge of the situation if he is the leader of the Palestinian and not ignore the world needs to come to Gaza and give them an accord, dismantle your arm, let us give them the economic benefits that they need. And as you said, John, there are opportunities that they are not looking at. You know, the history can tell about that. And, you know, John, you know very well that given the time, if they give peace a chance there, they can come with a real great idea to be, the Hong Kong of the Middle East.
All progress. Anything that has ever been done in the history of the world that is remembered fondly, that we look back and say that was an achievement, was a cause taken up by a courageous person. Cowards have never, there has never been a time in the history of the world where we remember cowards fondly. It's courageous people that we remember. And you know that if you look at Begin, if you look at Rabin, if you look at Sharon, these were courageous leaders that made hard decisions and came to the table with people who at one point were considered their enemy and said, let's negotiate a future together. But we have not seen that same level of courage exercised by Netanyahu, nor have we seen anyone, Abu Mazen or anyone on the Palestinian side, exercising that level of courage. And until we have courageous people coming to the table together in a spirit of goodwill and thinking about not only their future, but the future of their grandchildren, of their state, and they say, let's work this out. Let's come to a viable resolution that allows us to live side by side in peace and prosperity, then it won't happen. But it's going to have to be something internal. I don't think it's something that can be imposed from without. And if it is imposed from without, it's not going to favor Israel. There's a movement around the world where people have tremendous sympathy for the Palestinians. They're watching they're watching these women being bombed. They're watching these villages. And they're noticing that in spite of the thousands of bottle rockets being thrown over at Israel, there are no casualties.
Well, thank God for that. Come on. We're not going to blame Israel that they didn't get wounded, but because they were smart to protect and work for defense of Israel. But the Palestinians, tell me.
But it does win the Palestinian sympathy abroad. And the movement that's afoot, and the movement that is very viable, more viable than people want to admit, is that Israel could become the victim of international sanctions in the future. The type of sanctions that we saw used against South Africa during apartheid. And here in this country, here in the United States, candidates like Rand Paul, okay, really do support that type of thinking. And within the universities, that type of discussion is taking place. And even among young Jews, that type of conversation is taking place. Now, if Israel doesn't control the dialogue and doesn't bring about a resolution, then what's going to happen is that the international community is going to start to propose things that become very painful for Israel to deal with in the future. It's time for Netanyahu to exercise courage, and it's time to look for a courageous partner on the Palestinian side that is willing to discuss the future of these two countries, of these two people, in an honest way.
John, I appreciate this really dialogue because it's really truthful. We need to have more courage and honor from both sides. Now, the idea is that the Palestinian needs to get a grip with the fact that they got sabotaged by a terrorist organization. They need to get rid of them. They need to give the leader of their choice, I don't know what election was, when was the last election, I think in 2005. But whatever, we have to call a new election in the Palestinian side, elect the government, then we can talk. This is the leader of the world, of the Palestinian world, and the Jewish people around the world, they sometimes feel sympathy because they were a victim for so many years. But something we have to realize, Israel needs to defend Israel needs to stand for the Jewish people and for the God of Israel that, you know, has been rejected daily from the holy places by Palestinians. So let's call it, quits by attacking the Jews. Let's call it quits by attacking Israel. Let's tell them that we sign a peace accord. We are willing to respect it if they stop attacking us. We are much stronger, of course. We are much bigger. We are trained, and we have much power. We organize country. They are not. They are cells of terrorists. Of course we can hurt them, but we don't want to. So they need to dismantle Hamas. United Nations needs to handle all those people. You know, they are in the midst. Their duty, they are there. It's under their control. And then come to the table. We help together build a better Middle East. We help them prosper. And we'll bring to the table back the idea of brother of the man. We can live together. They are our brothers, half-brother, sons of Abraham. They should not forget it. And we want our brother back in a good way. And we had him for a turmoil of years. So let's conclude today, John, with a prayer that God will give us the force, the power, and the ultimate ideas, that, and bring people like you, like Buck, that to bring them together to help this world to overcome, because we don't want another war, and God forbid if they start escalating it in the whole region, going north, and you know what's next. Thank you so much.
And, you know, both of us believe, and both of us hope, that the God of Abraham will give our leaders the courage to do what's right and the wisdom to discern what's best. And I agree with you, but I'll leave you with a thought, too, Orly, and that is this. Israel, and let's talk about the Knesset, and let's talk about the United States Congress. You know that the Knesset and the Congress share one thing in common, and that's that if you have three people in a room, you have seven opinions, right? And you have endless agreements, right? I mean, this is the reality, because you have competing interests. Let's not pretend that the Palestinians themselves don't have competing interests within their own political party. But these things will sort themselves out. But the one thing we cannot do, we can't afford to do, is say, hold an election, pick your leaders, and if they pick the people we don't like, we say we're not going to talk to them. Remember that you agreed to have dialogue for peace with your enemies, not your allies. There's no need for dialogue between allies to discuss peace. You agree to dialogue for peace with your enemy or with those that think differently. And so if we hold fair elections there, and they represent a leader that we don't necessarily favor, we still have to get that leader an opportunity to sit at the table and negotiate.
That's sure thing, John. I appreciate that thought, and makes me think about the whole list of leaders that we do like here from a different perspective and what happened to them. But all these history books. John, thank you so much for coming to my show. I love having a conversation with you every time, and we keep it for a long time. And I hope all the best for you, and I hope to talk to you soon. God bless you. Say hi to all your family. I love you. Thank you so much for being on my show. Thank you.
Thank you, Orly. You know I love you, and I'll come on anytime. Shalom.
Shalom, but darling, shalom. God bless you. And let's go to a break, Doc. And I'm back. I'm so happy to have John and Mr. Ravel on. It's incredible when you have people of such a capacity and such a magnitude to talk about the issue. And it's really not easy to understand the Middle East and everybody out there that thinks that the Middle East is too complicated. It's not. We have a global condition to have a place for everybody. We need to understand each other, and we need to decide how we're going to live, if we want to fight each other or we want to choose to tolerate and give and respect and love each other. The idea of brotherhood of man is something that, you know, is bestowed upon us. And we know from the beginning of time that when we start, if we come together and reach out, it will be okay. Of course, those are, you know, there is those greedy one, the one that wants to take it all. But at the end of the day, society recognizes them. At the end of the day, you know, and, you know, remember, you're not alone, and you're not alone. I gave you that song because it's so true. Think about all those missiles that were shot into Israel today by, you know, like I think the last time I counted was 60 or 70 missiles, and everyone hold incredible power of destruction going into the air, flying to hit Tel Aviv, a big city. Madness. Think about another one, flying over Jerusalem, all the places, the city of God, of everybody, the world, come every time to come and pray God there. They're shooting at it. And God gave us the gift to have incredible friends in America that help us develop the Iron Dome. The Iron Dome is a protective edge that nobody can you know, thank enough of the wisdom. And it was, I remember when Reagan, bless his soul, was thinking about how we can protect the ceiling from any attack from, you know, in the Cold War. And I guess that idea came about in this Iron Dome. And sure enough, we got one. And if it wasn't for the Iron Dome, there were all destruction here. But no, God protect us. God gave us the miracle to help us protect. And it's in the days, you know, it's written in the Bible, in that days when everybody comes and God will protect us. It's not us. It's He who rules the world that give us the power to protect ourselves. So the siren might have gone today. Maybe Hamas called it ceasefire. Usually it would give a show at 8 p.m. at night, you know, when the moment of the starting of the show, like you gave last week when I started my first show. But today maybe they decided to quit because they're not going to win. They lost this round, but they got something else. If anybody wanted to give them something else, they got the attention of the world. They're desperate. They're willing to do everything in their power, and they are suicidal. They want to die. But in that suicidal mission, they want to take with them those million people. So we have to save those million people. And, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, you know, who they are, and I believe that they're all people that want a better tomorrow for their children. And Israel has no, you know, intention to hurt them. They call upon them to move themselves, but we know they're the terrorists they're holding hostage. So I think that for the heck of the idea, Hamas needs to come back. We'll understand better if we just quit fighting. It's not God is good and the God of everybody, and they need to accept that God of Israel is with us and is gonna be there here for a long time. So they cannot find him. Nobody can. It's a part of this world. Everyone has, you know, the power to believe, and we have the right to have the freedom to worship whoever we want. And that will be the beauty about this world, when everybody will come before God, one, united, under understanding that we respect each other and we are together, and it doesn't matter who we are. And let's go to a break right now. All right, that's the story of our life, the story of our life that we have to beat, that sense of egos, that ego, that control, that wants to go and do whatever he wants and forget that we are a spirit of honor, of beauty, of respect. We are people that can change the world every time, every day for the next person around. If you look around you, you can see that smile on another person's face, and you will smile back, and you made their day. The idea of bringing yourself to create a better day. We tried all the rest. You know, people saying, you know, we have to do that and that. No, we need to learn. We need to use our wisdom. We need to create a situation where help, happiness, we help the old, we help the children, let them grow, give a better chance to this world. We it's a misery already. It's enough. The other generation fought it, and now I can hear another blow in the sky. So let's call all those angels to help us through. God bless you all. I love you. Keep it up. Keep it up. Keep it up. You can make it. Be the best one. Make it happen. God bless you all. And thank you so much for your time. Till the next time, this is Orly Benny Davis, Impossible Truth. God bless you.